This house, to which those who believe in God are taken, is situated in the middle of an area of parkland, and from the house one has a stunning view across the park in all directions. Now you in your world have your houses with picture windows which allow you an unimpeded view of your surroundings. Well, we in our world have windows too, but not quite the same as yours. The kind of glass you look through is made of physical substances. In the spiritual world we, too, have glass, but made of a wholly spiritual material. And, furthermore, these windows, to use your word, are exceptionally large. So, for example, there could be a whole wall made out of just one window, making it possible to have a wonderful view of the surrounding parkland. This park is of course filled with the most beautiful trees, mostly palms and cedars. There is a small lake with all sorts of birds and waterfowl, and their many different colors are a lovely sight. They enjoy themselves swimming on the water, or waddling up and down the main path. The eyes of every brother and sister in the room are riveted on all this activity outside. They stand and stare, and ask question after question. They have never thought about what heaven might look like. That there should be a real house here, as well as everything else, is something quite unexpected. The animals, too, and trees of such beauty, also come as a complete surprise. From this point on, they begin to take an interest in this new world, and as they do so, they forget about the distressing parts of the life they have just left. One of them will declare that he or she has seen something of great interest, or another will call everyone's attention to something he or she has just seen, and a lively conversation develops. There is no more weeping and wailing for the events of the past. This new world is far too interesting for them to need to dwell on what has gone before. Certainly there will be one or two who are still overcome, briefly, by feelings of sadness, but they take a deep breath and say, "What happiness! It's all behind me now. I have come through all right. What do I want to be grieving for now, talking about all those things that are in the past? I want to enjoy the future. I want to live for the future." And they all support each other in this new way of thinking. Meanwhile, beautiful spirits of God take it in turns to mingle among them, asking them whether they like it here and if they are in any discomfort. These beings also bring with them various kinds of food, fruit, or something to drink. How important these brothers and sisters feel at being the focus of so much care and attention. Let me now tell you what happened on one particular occasion. The spiritual world made a very great impression on these new brothers and sisters of ours, and they were eager to begin to experience everything here. "If this little park is so interesting," they said to each other, "what must the rest of the heavenly world be like? How many more things must there be to admire and simply stare at in amazement? There seems to be no end of it." Then, all of a sudden, one of the group called out, "Look over there," pointing to one of the cedar trees whose branches were almost touching the ground. "Just look," the same one cried again, "on the branches of the tree. Look at all the tiny people, like little dolls. Do come and have a look." At that they all responded with great interest, as I did myself when I, too, experienced these things for the first time. Little beings about the size of small dolls were jumping on and off the branches. These tiny creatures were prettily and finely dressed, swinging from one branch to another. This was really something to stand and stare at. Having gathered round to watch, they then all waited expectantly to be told what sort of creatures these were. They were not any kind of bird or animal, that they were sure of. They must therefore, they declared, be some sort of miniature spirit beings. And so, for a while, the attention of the group was focused on the tiny creatures. Then gradually, in ones and twos, they withdrew from the window and settled back into the main body of the room. Inserted Gilbert Williams Art Blas, the room was filled with all sorts of comfortable chairs and couches. One could lie down and rest or simply sit and talk. When someone spotted something new, something seen for the first time and of particular interest, a call would go out to the others, "Come and see what I have just seen." And those who hadn't seen this thing before, who hadn't been in the house all chat long, would go and gaze out into the surrounding park. And so, once again, something new had been discovered. Such things, indeed this whole new world, had a profoundly transforming effect upon the state of mind of these once so terrified human beings. All their feelings were changed. Those who had formerly been so depressed and joyless now became happy and full of enthusiasm for this new world, and all this through what they were able to experience and observe. Now while one of the group was busy observing these tiny beings, elves, as they are called, who are also part of our world, another member of the group could be heard shouting, "Look over there! Beside that bush," describing exactly which bush he meant. "There's something quite extraordinary there. See it moving? Just wait till you see that. They look just like the gnomes in our garden." These gnomes were, however, not as deformed as people on Earth make them look. They were, on the contrary, handsome and well proportioned. They were small, but very much adults, that much was clear. They were also very pretty to look at. These beings, gnomes, as we call them, were busily working, dragging the branches here and there. Our brothers and sisters, every one of them, stared in amazement. Even those who had already seen the gnomes doing similar things before were once again surprised by how vigorously and enthusiastically the little figures applied themselves to their work. Everyone was astonished and wanted to know what was going on. The elves hopped around the branches and went right up to the gnomes and began teasing them. The gnomes, however, refused to let themselves be disturbed. They had been building small huts with branches they had dragged back with them from various places all over the park. We were amazed to see all this and filled with astonishment at how the gnomes were able to build these little huts with such skill and expertise. Everyone was of course most eager now to find out what was really going on, and whether the gnomes actually lived in these huts. Some members of the group who had been in the house quite a while, and who had spent some time in this room, said that these gnomes were always there to see, carrying on with their tricks, but as fast as they appeared, they disappeared, not to be seen again for a while. Whatever it was the gnomes were doing, no one had ever observed them doing this before. This tremendous enthusiasm for their work, this endless ant-like activity. Soon it seemed that the huts were ready. And then the gnomes could be seen bringing out chairs, likewise crafted out of twigs and beautifully carved. They brought them out into a small clearing. There were only a few of these chairs, one of which was particularly beautifully decorated. It was immediately clear that someone important was going to sit here, for this chair had been constructed to be a kind of throne, with a high back and a little canopy, all made out of tiny, carefully woven branches. This handsome throne had been decorated with feathers of all colors, and the other chairs were by contrast made entirely out of simple twigs. And so, this was how these brothers and sisters recovered from their emotional distress and were enabled to put behind them the haunting memories of their last painful hours on Earth. I watched their tears and then the laughter that followed. These distressing times were not yet completely in the past. Memories still persisted into the present. But they were nonetheless profoundly glad to have left that awesome, troubled world. The brothers and sisters would do their best to comfort one another. They could be heard saying to each other, "Don't think about it anymore. Come on, look at all this instead. There are such wonderful things to see here." I should add here that the group was not permitted to leave the house. They were all required to stay in the one room. But this was no inconvenience since they had such a wonderful view of their surroundings. And so, there our brothers and sisters were, waiting with great anticipation for a momentous event. Preparations had all been carried out and they were convinced that a festive procession was about to take place, and this is indeed what occurred. After a short pause we began to hear the most delicate, high-pitched sounds. Indeed we had to strain our ears to make them out. It was the elves, standing on the branches, who announced the procession's arrival with tiny musical instruments. The elves looked even more beautifully dressed than before, as if they really were prepared for an important celebration. We also looked over to the waterfowl on the lake. They seemed, however, to be quite unmoved by what was taking place in the park. They swam to and fro, left the water and waddled up and down in the park, and took no notice of what was going on around them. To the accompaniment of these tiny, delicate sounds, a whole procession of gnomes came out from the surrounding shrubbery. Clearly a celebration of some kind was about to take place. The clothes they were wearing were decorated with feathers and flowers, so they stopped only when they came to the center of the clearing, where the handsome throne had been placed. The first to step forward was, we were told, the leader of the band of gnomes. He alone wore a cloak with a train, whereas the others simply had feathers and flowers as embellishments to their clothes. Adorning his tiny head was a crown made out of miniature white feathers, with a small bunch of colored feathers fixed in the center, at the front. His train, too, was made entirely of delicate tittle feathers. The brothers and sisters nudged each other and smiled when they saw this. Wherever did the gnomes get those tiny feathers? They said. Let's hope they didn't pluck them straight from the poor birds. It was clear they were greatly enjoying all that was there for them to watch. And now, the leader of the gnomes was actually taking his place on the throne. His train bearers had prepared his seat for him, and he appeared ready to address his people. We heard nothing of what was said. It was all, including the music that followed, too faint for us to register. But we did see enough to conclude that something important was taking place. Naturally, we remained very quiet and continued to watch with a great sense of wonderment and fascination. After some time, the leader of the gnomes rose from his throne. On his right and left, others had been sitting, too, on chairs that had likewise been specially set out. The rest of the assembled group had listened standing up. After a pause, they all withdrew into chair little huts and remained there a while. At sporadic intervals, one of them would then come out and, it seemed, pay a visit to his fellow gnomes in one of the other huts. This went on for quite some time. Meanwhile, our divine spirit companions came to see how we were. They all looked so cheerful and, as usual, brought with them something for each individual in the room. My job was to look after the members of the group, and report back to the divine beings in charge if anything untoward should occur. I was also permitted to leave this room and attend for a time to other duties. I could, however, always return to this room and see to the welfare of any being I had already helped during his or her time on Earth. The gnome's celebration lasted a certain time, and then the company collected their things in readiness for their departure. We watched them briefly reassemble, and then they all quietly trooped off, accompanied by the same faint music as had marked their arrival. The elves, for their part, seemed particularly keen to investigate the scene of these proceedings. When the company of gnomes had gone, they came down from the branches and ran in and out of the huts. After that, they climbed onto the roofs of the huts and played all sorts of amusing games with one another. Then several of the gnomes returned. These were gnomes who lived in this particular park. We watched them teasing and joking with the elves. Later, they carried everything away, chairs were removed, huts were dismantled. Where the gnomes went with the branches, we did not see. They disappeared once again, and it was time for our group to take a rest. The attention of the group now focused on the future. Everyone expected a new life would now begin to unfold. But at this point, an angel of God, a spirit who held a position of authority, came to address the group. This is what the angel said: we had given you a small glimpse of the riches of God's realm, and this has enabled you to put the recent events of your lives on Earth firmly behind you. Through these new and very different experiences, we have made it possible for you to observe a small part of the great diversity of this world. You have sampled one of the entertainments that exist here. There is another side to God's world, however, which we would like you to be aware of. You need now to recognize that the enjoyments of life here in the spiritual world must be earned. The angel went on to tell them that God's love and mercy is immeasurable. Those who suffered on earth, he said, would be looked after in the spiritual world, and would enter a world of bliss. They would be astonished and amazed at what they saw in heaven, and they would rightly be called children of God. This spiritual tie, from father to child, would, however, carry with it certain responsibilities with respect to what they would go on to experience here in this world. Accordingly, from now on, they were to work with that future in mind, so that they would be able to respond to, and appreciate, riches and diversity beyond anything they now knew, and so they could eventually play their part in the unfolding development of life in this new world. The Divine Spirit continued with these words, "You will remain here only a short while longer. Then each of you will be led to a place which in our judgment is most suitable for you, where you will carry out the work which will be assigned to you and from where you will continue your ascent." This new path, they were told, was to be a path of work, and it would be some time before they would be able to experience again what they had seen here. Life would be quite different. For the present, they would be under the charge of more senior brothers and sisters who would introduce them to their work and give them whatever instruction they might need. They could then confidently and with good cheer begin their lives in the new world ahead. The time thus came for all of them to leave the house so that others could be given the opportunity to heal their inner wounds and put their sadness and unhappiness behind them, too. Others also needed to be able to experience a tiny piece of the beauty, the rich diversity and delights of the world beyond. Everyone in the group was brimming over with questions. They were concerned with many things, but without being able to settle their thoughts on any one thing in particular. Why are there elves here? Why were there elves at all? Why are the gnomes? Why did they come here? Such were their questions. All of these things were to be explained to them later, much later. For now, they were simply to take the experience with them and treasure what they had seen. Then they were all led out of the house, and the space was free for new arrivals. It is not my intention to tell you now about the work these brothers and sisters went on to do, because it was all so varied. They did, however, all enter the same level. They were directed to a place where they could each take up an activity suited to their particular abilities and talents. In this way they all succeeded in recovering from their past sorrows. They had no fecklings of hatred, they felt only surprise and admiration for this new world, and for the love and mercy God had bestowed upon them. At the beginning I explained that those who had been without any faith during their lives on earth also received their share of support. As are those who have believed in God, they are taken to a nursing home, if I can use one of your terms, and they, too, will first of all be given an opportunity to sleep. How they are helped after that, however, is a different matter, and their surroundings, too, are different. The house where they are taken has none of the colorfulness of the first. But they are nevertheless carefully looked after by divine spirit beings. Their house, and the room in which they stay, does not allow them the same wide views of the surrounding area, nor the same rich diversity of things to admire. They see a little greenery, but that is all. Everything else is bare ground. After having assembled in this room and following their first period of sleep, these newly returned souls are likewise, at intervals, given something to drink. They are then very pointedly told by the divine spirits looking after them that it is now time for them to cast aside their hatred. Life continues. They are told, "You lived without God while you were on earth, but God has readily accepted you into His world now. He has taken you into His care and is giving you an opportunity to change your attitude. Try to rid yourselves of your feelings of hate, and then, where you have succeeded in doing that, we will take you to a place where you may begin some kind of work, if that is your wish. On the other hand, if you prefer to spend some time free of any activities whatsoever, then that way is open to you, too. To be sure, the better and more intelligent choice would be the path of work. If you work, you will forget the past much more quickly, and there will be other spirit brothers and sisters there to support you, too, and help you to recover from the more difficult moments of your past. And so, they remain here for a time. What they like to look out at are the small bits of greenery in the otherwise empty landscape. They talk among one another. There will be one who will still be furious and full of hatred, who refuses to work. He will not hesitate to admit it, he wants to be free. Another will say, "It's all over. I have entered a new world now, and I want to get used to this new place and its conditions. I don't want to know another thing about the old world. I'd rather work. Work, I hope, will help me to move forward, and upward. One says one thing, another says something quite different. Sometimes, too, they vacillate, unable to decide what to think, and let themselves be influenced by the others. Those who have lived entirely without faith of any kind, and who are still angrily resisting, will say, if God really were a God of love, he would stop people from fighting wars and killing one another. And if there were a God of love, he would make sure that love triumphs on earth, and he would have stamped out all evil right from the start. I can't believe there could be a God of love who would let me suffer as I have done. These will be the words of one, and then another will say quite the opposite. We live our lives without God, and that's why he didn't bother about us. But now we have got the chance to change. You heard, they told us, he hasn't abandoned us, he has brought us into this new world. And so now it's up to us. One of them can be saying things of this sort, and many will join in and say, good then, that's what I think Oswell. This new world imposes its demands, and I want to meet them. I don't want to lose out on anything ever again. I want to adapt to the new. When the time comes for the gates of the house to be opened, this house to which they were brought in order to spend time in reflection and self-examination, two separate directions become evident. Some, who wish to be free, set off on one journey, and are attracted back to earth, to people and their vices. Others, who now genuinely desire to adjust to this new world, are ready for work. And so, joining together, they set off on their particular journey, to look for work. Soon, of course, they realize that there is work of all kinds busily going on around them. They begin to offer their services and to ask if they are needed anywhere. They are looking for work. They have nothing as yet to do. The others, who already have worked, quickly run up to one of the spirit brothers or sisters in authority, and say, come. Someone is looking for work. Take them under your charge. It is known straight away where the newcomer has come from, and he or she is treated with great gentleness. What do you think you could do? The newcomer is asked. What sort of thing did you do on earth? When, for example, it is a brother who was once a day laborer, who therefore has no particular skills and no training in any one job, then he must first learn a trade. He is sent here and there to try out various things and see what aptitudes or skills he has. Sometimes I go and visit these brothers and sisters, to see how they are getting on. It's always apparent to me that those who choose to take up work of some kind never regret their decision to do so. They have taken the first step on their journey upwards, and they are very happy. Normally, too, those who have begun work are allowed to meet up with their parents or other relatives. On these occasions, the parents, should they be living in an interesting part of the spiritual world, will tell of their life and surroundings, and encourage their son or daughter to work hard. The parents will also do what they can to motivate and inspire their child. For it is usually the case that one takes more notice of what one's own family says, the family one had on earth, confident that they will be certain to tell the truth. They will tell one more than the average spirit brother or sister, and they will also tell one who else is here. And so, when the newcomer meets up with his or her relatives, some substantial progress is made, and it becomes clear to the individual how much he or she still has to overcome. The focus is on making an effort to cease thinking about the past, and to live only for the journey of ascent ahead. And so I have told you about the work I do here, and those whom I help and support. It is time now that I withdrew. All of us who are linked with you entrust you to God's blessing and protection. May this blessing give you the strength to carry out God's most holy will, so that you are able to live a life that is pleasing to Him, which will enable us in our turn to come and visit you. God bless you. Address by the Ascending Spirit Mathis, received on 7 April 1965 in German through Beatrice Brunner. Here one also get help from nature in the form of the combinations of the basic energies, means that the memory energy is latent, on the lowest level, in what Martinus calls the real human kingdom, which exists in an unfinished spiritual form on the higher stages of this spiritual plane, which many visits during these rest periods between theophysical incarnations. See yellow field in symbol number 12, but a full explanation is not given here on the link, but rather see here, row remark, Peter, death at an early age, personal report, 2 June 1965, God bless. My name is Peter. I died when I was 17. During my short life on Earth I never gave any particular thought to the world beyond. When I entered this world where everything was quite new to me, I was met by my grandmother, clearly overjoyed that I had come home. She spoke plainly to me about how very sad my parents now were, but explained that time would heal the wounds of separation and that their sadness would ease. Once again she expressed her immense joy at my homecoming and then asked me to come directly to her home. I should add that, in fact, it was not just my grandmother who came to greet me, but a number of other beings as well. These other beings, however, I did not know. I didn't pay much attention to them as I was in any case too full of joy at finding, among all those present, at least someone I knew, someone very dear to me, my grandmother. The beings I did not know then withdrew without speaking to me, and it seemed to me as if my grandmother was already fully informed as to how to proceed, and so she asked me to come to her home. She shared a small house with others, but had a set of rooms all to herself which were very prettily furnished. As I looked at all the various objects there, I found myself reacting with constant amazement. I looked at everything as closely as I could, picking things up to examine them better and finally said to my grandmother, I find it so strange that this new world has so much like what is on Earth. Actually, one imagines the world beyond to be completely different. But straight away I added, of course, I can see that these things are needed here as well, and that beauty and comfort are obviously appreciated here too. But if people on Earth only knew about this, they would be so surprised. In actual fact it scarcely bothered me that I had had to leave the earthly world when I did, as I had been ill for a time and no longer had much interest in human life. So I was very pleased at this change and at being able to live in this new world. It offered me so much that was new to experience, and I was convinced that life was going to be extremely interesting. My grandmother gave me her whole attention, and I felt completely at ease in her home. The next thing I wanted to know was how she spent her time. Surely she couldn't pass the time just by staying in her rooms or going for walks. Were there things to do by way of amusement here? I wondered, and finally I asked, do you have to go to church as well here, or do you meet for prayers, or however you put it? Grandmother explained, well now, you are going to be very surprised when I tell you what goes on here in this world. You died at an early age, but we are all young when we come home. It is really only the physical body that grows tired and old and which is returned to the earth. The spiritual body does not age, it always appears full. It was true, grandmother really did look young, no grey hair or wrinkled face. In fact, I had made the very same compliment to her when I arrived. And yet she still looked very similar to how I remembered her as a boy. I had the impression too that I now looked younger than I was, indeed I felt quite boyish. Then grandmother confided to me, life here is certainly going to be very different for you. You weren't able to take on any particular kind of work while you were in physical life, and you ought now to get yourself some training here, just as you would have done on Earth had it been possible for you. Your parents looked after you because it wasn't yet time for you to earn your own living. Now you can begin your professional training here. I listened attentively to what grandmother had said, but I was really intent on finding out how she spent her time here. Now then, Peter, she said in reply, you can still remember grandfather, can't you? And the house we used to live in? We had a beautiful garden, and whenever time permitted I was to be found in the garden where there was always a lot to do. I was very fond of that garden, I loved the flowers. And our animals. Here, too, I am allowed to work in a garden, though this one is so big that one can scarcely call it that. I will show it to you later. It's not only very large and much, much more beautiful than my previous one, it is also far more interesting, despite demanding a great deal more work from all of us who look after it. We talked happily on together and the time passed quickly. Grandmother then led me outside, and together we looked round the area immediately surrounding the house.